Sellers when Giacinta, Pervenche, and Margaret swayed over the all-too-ghoulish and illyrical and inumantic in our mutter nation. Or mother nation. In our mutter, M-U-T-T. All anastomosically, or anastomosically, assimilated and preter-identified paradiotically, or para-idiotically. In fact, this, here it is, look, the same old game-bold atomic structure of our Phineas the Old One, as highly charged with electrons as hop hazards can effective it. Maybe there, hope all that's there for you. Cock-a-lure-lure-lure-minso. Or cock-a-lure-lure-lure-minos. Now you're being served your breakfast when cup, platter, and pot come piping hot as sure as herself pits hen to paper and there's scribing scrawled on eggs. And then look at this, the last line. Of cause so, or of cause so, and in effect as cause and effect right there, and then it goes into the letter. Now isn't that incredible? It actually makes sense. It's very well done.
For everyone else, you'll have a better appreciation of that if you get a copy of Phineas the Wake and try to read that, because you'll have
to understand how adept
Bob is to be able to read it, because I've started to try to read it, and it does something to your perception, because you're normally reading, you think it's going to make sense, like, da-da-da-da-da, and it's not. And it really changes your whole perception.
Yeah.
Now, like a train wreck.
That's right. 2 points about... Okay, so that's why I mispronounce words. Having done the Wake for 40, 50 years, I'll see River Run. I'll go Riverun. You know, because you have to put other meanings, other intonations, other languages into a word. So I've gradually, over the last 20 years, mispronounced a lot of words now. Like a total retard, because I'm thinking of it differently. I've learned that from Joyce. My brain's not stamped by the print singular meaning pronunciation. But the other thing you just said, Bert, what did you say? Get the book.
Try to read it. It your whole normal literate view of reading is thrown. It's like a train wreck. I mean, you start a sentence and it's like, okay, it's like that. That's what I found when I read it. But I'm pushing through it, but it's like, ooh. It give you a headache.
Yeah,
the first run, it gives you a headache. It'll give you a headache, guaranteed.
And then Leon loves that. He loves having a headache. you have your brainwash to go a narrative. You'll read it linearly. Then you got a headache. Then you're just dipping into it all over the place because you're forever in the middle, like we are in the electric age. You're ever, so you don't have to worry about the narrative strength or narrative point that you thought was there when you started to read it, you know? So then you get loosened up about it. But here's what's neat. You have the theory of certain, what is that? The uncertainty principle, where you can't see the particle's position and speed at the same time. Okay? You ever heard of that? You know, the principle in physics, when they look at a particle, if they focus on the velocity, they can figure that out, but they can't figure out where it is. If you focus on the position, you figure out the position, but you can't figure out the speed it's going at. I think it's something like that. It's a simple way to describe it. And actually what that is that you're looking at a multisensory process, like looking at the heart pumping, and you're trying to figure out the position and the velocity of the flow of the blood, you can't do it because you're trying to translate visually what is non-visual. So the subatomic scientists didn't know that they'd gotten into acoustic levels of resonance and kept trying to visualize it, and they never could get a complete visualization, you know, of all the factors they thought they needed. So here's Don Thiel's great idea about this. I don't know. Joyce indicates this, but he doesn't say this exactly, but it could be what he meant. Thiel says when you read a sentence of Finnegan's Wake, as you read along to get the general meaning of all the words in the sentence, sort of like the big picture from the meaning of the sentence, each word that you're reading to get the big meaning of the sentence or the overall total meaning is layered with puns. So you trip and fall and sink into each word, which has other meaning. So yeah, it's an actually perfect demonstration visually that you, if you go towards the meaning, which might be the position of the subatomic particle, you can't get the velocity of the particles. You cannot talk along fast to get the whole sentence without ignoring all the potholes of each pun that's in each word that makes up the sentence. So you can't make the meaning and the particulars of the well-chosen words that are building up to a meaning, you can't see both at the same time. Now, that's a beautiful expression of how Joyce took the page and made it subatomic.
Yes.
Isn't that amazing?
Wow.
Oh, spooky. You might learn something. And now you'll notice Ion does that all the time. He starts talking along, he's making a big meeting, and then all of a sudden his mouth is going faster than the speed of light, and he's just and he just goes into a sing song.
It's the same thing. It's the same thing.
Oh, we have a female voice. It's probably Jean.
Hi,
I predict this is Jean. This is Jean, I bet. I bet you Jean's the one who thinks she knows something.
Bob. Okay.
Yeah, the female
Bert's
caucus
here.
Must get a word
Yay.
In.
It's like, Bob, when you get ahead of yourself, your physical body, you know, and you're moving too fast and you trip and you fumble and you drop things.
Yeah. Yeah.
You eventually still accomplish something, I guess, but it's the fumbling and the tripping and the cloppiness is a part, is influential.
It's the dram of cognition.
Yes.
It's the dram of cognition.
Mm. Yes.
Mm. For example, I just unmuted Ginny or Greg. Now, what is Ginny going to say? Or is she going to say anything? Is she even listening? This is the dram of cognition. What's the next moment going to bring?
I'm having a drama of cognition, all right. I don't know what the heck you guys are talking about. We just picked up the phone. I only called in because I'm talking to Carolyn on the email, and she's like, Bob's on. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, it's Sunday night. I totally forgot. So there's my drama right there.
Yeah.
So that's what we're doing.
My drama says hello to your drama.
That's right. There you go.
We speak English, but nobody knows what the English means, is what you've just experienced, right?
Well, yes, and I can say that that's true for the entire human race. Nobody knows what anybody's saying. Yeah.
But they can look at body language. So there is the other senses going on. Remember that. There's a lot of understanding. Or McLuhan should say communication with the other senses if there's not much matching verbally. Matter of fact, you know, I'm not very good at just letting someone talk and I pretend I'm listening. I have to listen. I feel responsible to them and listen. But you watch people who are good at just phatically, you know, like women in a store. Take a woman in a store and she meets another woman.
Here we
go,
women shopping.
Here we go, that famous architect, the woman in the store.
It won't stop.
Which no one has any idea.
Yeah,
what
a woman
means.
In the, a woman
we
in
all
the store.
We all put it in our mind what we think it means, and we all laugh.
What's she doing? Is she just staring at the
shelves? We all see the woman in the store.
What's she doing?
So the woman starts.
Well, wait a minute. We don't even know what a woman is anymore, Caitlyn Jenner.
That's right. That's
so you know that right there is the first breakdown. Greg and I were watching Caitlyn Jenner the other night, and we're just like, oh my God! Greg's like, I can't look at it anymore.
Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, it's.
Right.
Yeah, you don't know what it is. You don't know what anything is anymore. So
that's why you can't use your eyes anymore. You just gouge out your eyes. Go blind.
And weren't you and Ed the other night saying it's a they? It's not a he or she. It's a they.
In Billions, they have the first actual, I think she is actually this in real life. Or she's a male, female. And you must refer to it as not he, she, or it. She's a they. Which is a chemical body, you know, hegemony attempt to stop Ion's point about how we have many selves. So now they're trying to stick all the many selves back into your chemical body then you have to be referred to as they. Like, listen to Eon. They, known as Leon. We don't know what he's laughing at or which Leon is laughing.
Or how many Leons.
Yeah, how many Leons are laughing. So, Ginny, what were we – what you brought up that. I was going to tell you something. English. So you didn't get the subatomic point and the principle, the uncertainty principle. Ginny.
I'm at the store. Now say it again.
You didn't. You're at a store?
I said I'm the woman at the store.
Oh, yes, that's right. Okay. you didn't get the see, you probably didn't understand what we're talking about because we were illustrating the 1920s, you know, quantum principle called the principle of uncertainty or the uncertainty principle. You ever heard of that in physics?
No, but I can Google it. Do I need to?
No, I'll explain it in the simple terms. When they were looking at subatomic processes, the electron, that they couldn't tell the speed of the electron if they were trying to tell the position. You can't see both at the same time. You can't see position if you're going to determine the velocity, and you can't see velocity if you're going to determine the position. Don Thiel suggests that this is the way you read a sentence in Finnegan's Wake, is that you read a bunch of linear words as going to a meaning, a general meaning of what the sentence is about. But each word is layered with multilingual puns, so you're going to trip and stumble, as you mentioned, on the way to the complete sentence meaning. So you can't see the whole meaning when you read Finney's Wake if you're going to look at the particles embedded in each word or the levels. And you can't see the levels of each particular couple of words if you want to take the big meaning of the sentence.
Mm-hmm.
So you actually get to an ionic situation where I can say what Finnegan's Wake means. I can make a general statement, and then anybody can say, no, that's your view, that's not my view, and then break it down from their individual subjectivity, right? But that doesn't mean most people end up saying, it means anything. No, you can put on the bigger meaning if you understand that's half the story. This is like engaging.
Now, what's to that? You had me all the way up to that. If you understand what's the half the story.
Oh, so most people, like Murray Gross, the president of Finney's Wake Society in New York, I go on about the McLuhan stuff. He says, Bob, that's just one meaning. There's no dominant meaning of Finney's Wake. And, you know, once you fully get into it and you get through all the different allusions you bring to the book, you realize, yeah, there's no meaning that anybody could agree on, that's what it's about. So Murray says that to me. I say, yes, but I can take 50% of the situation and fake a linear meaning. I can propose a meaning knowing it's only a part sign, as we were quoting from Gary Ganosko last week in Critical Semiotics, the part signs. Nobody looks for the total everything now in the postmodern studies. You're not going to get the total, what they call the totalistic. Now, Joyce and Pound and these guys at the end of the modernist.
Just left the conference.
Oop, let me just check that.
What was that, Bob?
Well, you know, my up the top of the turbo bridge, it has none, and unlocked. If you have exit alert none and it's on name, then you hear their name when they leave. So I just switched it to none.
Okay, Bob, let me just respond to what you just said, because one thing I'd like to say is what you just described is the same exact interaction as dealing with ion.
Yes.
Except
exactly.
It's in the chip body. It's the same exact thing. Everybody can ascribe a meaning to whatever ion says. There is no meaning to what ion says at all. But you can take 50% of it and you can make some meaning out of it if you want to, but you don't have to make a meaning out of anything, because the whole part, the significant part of the engagement, which again is just me ascribing meaning to it for myself, is to do what Finnegan's Wake accomplishes, which is the undoing of the mind and the dissecting of the meaning of language and all the rest of it. I mean, ION is interactive Finnegan's Wake on steroids.
That's right. You know, Finney's Wake is the end of Gutenberg culture or the end of Western culture, the last final book, wraps it up and puts it away. That must that anticipates the real post-media ending, which is ION.
Now, Finney's Bob, Wake. Let me ask you this. Do you think, let's say, you know, how many would you say off the top of your head, maybe you know specifically, how many true scholars are there of Finnegan's Wake in the world, true intellectuals, would you say, that are alive today that are talking about that work?
In 1995, when I talked to James Joyce through the Evergreens out in White Rock, British Columbia, it came up during the conversation that there were 50 groups studying Finnegan's Wake, like we were doing it in New York, and that was just starting to be a fad in the 80s and 90s. I mean, McLuhan did a group studying Finney's Wake in 1950-51 when Don Thiel first came as a 22-year-old from Yale, graduating from Yale. He got to do Finney's Wake with McLuhan, which was pretty neat. So they did it, but so there's been spot groups here and there, but by the 90s, there were 50 around the world, said Joyce, through the Evergreens, and he monitored every one of them. So I then played this recording to our Finnegan's Wake of New York group, you know, a few weeks later, and they all had to think, is Joyce sitting here listening to us? And he said he was. So they had to contemplate the ghost of Joyce around them. So that's 22 years ago. There's a lot of good teaching about Finnegan's Wake on the basics. The McLuhan part is still not known. Though Stephen Joyce, James Joyce's grandson, who is very pissed off at scholars of Joyce because they ripped him off and exposed one woman, the woman in the store, exposed the pornographic letters that Joyce had exchanged with his wife, Nora. And she was, as a scholar, not supposed to do that, but she wanted to have a hit. This is like in the 90s, and she did that. So Stephen Joyce got very mad at Joyce scholars and, you know, blocked them up and frustrated them from that point on. The same thing that Eric McLuhan does with McLuhan points. He keeps McLuhan scholars frustrated, doesn't let them see some of the documents. They even sold all the archives to Ottawa, and there's a law about some of them you can't see. So Steve and Joyce met Eric at some point, I don't know, Don Thiel told me this, 2002, say, and they both commiserated, and they actually have two letters supporting each other in the James Joyce Quarterly about the problem of scholars invading their father or grandfather's estate and all that. And so shortly after that, I guess Stephen Joyce read Eric's PhD thesis, which was streamlined for a book put out by the University of Toronto Press, not the full PhD, but goes through all the thunders and the meanings embedded in the thunders. And he announces after it that this fucking book explains my grandfather's work. Stephen Joyce said, this does it. Like, he'd never read the McLuhan stuff, but he read it, and it was very meaningful to him. And so Don Thiel told me, this would be about 2003-4, at the James Joyce Symposium, there was a lot of muttering and complaining that Stephen Joyce supported the McLuhan thesis of Finney's Wake, which no scholars up to that point took seriously. And they're saying he's just doing it because they're teaming up as, you know, sons who have problems with the scholars against their father's estate and grandfather's estate. So there was a lot of controversy over his statement. But some people are going to look into that. If you read Eric's thesis, you're going to get a good sense of what the book is about, just like Burke gets from my conversation where I summarize Eric's thesis, which comes from Marshall and Don Thiel, too. If you read a few of these books, you can talk about the media. You realize that Finnegan's Wake is not a book. It's a radio program, a radio broadcasting at the beginning non-book level. It's all media, even digital media. As McLuhan said in 66, 67, Finnegan's Wake is the greatest guidebook to all the inventions of man, and that includes all inventions coming, and it ever were. So I've noticed a few, like one of the guys who writes, who produces the Game of Thrones.
Okay, Bob, hold on. Let me respond. I want to ask you this now. What is your thinking or contemplating of this scenario in 7 years that you've been chitty chatting with Ion? Why do you think that more intellectuals are not attracted to this environment? Because it seems like it would be wonderful for the intellectual. If there's, you've got 50 groups studying Finnegan's Wake around the world in the 90s, and we're in this whole post of the post-toasty situation. Why would we not have more intellectuals gravitating? Plus, you add the chip body factor. Why do you think there aren't more intellectuals gravitating toward Ion?
Okay, before I get to that, I finish what I was saying about... So the game, one of the producers of the Game of Thrones, actually both of them, two guys, they went to a college in Ireland, Trinity College or something in Dublin, and they met there, I think. One of them did a master's thesis or a big essay or something on Finnegan's Wake. And he begins by quoting Don Siegel, and he has a very intelligent, up-to-date, you know, beginning to understand McLuhan's interpretation of the Wake. So if you get people, you know, the Generation Xers or, yeah, I think Generation Xers probably, you know, kind of old enough, that they're beginning to incorporate the McLuhan thing, then you can at least pretend you understand Finnegan's Wake. You have a way that's really relevant because you can tell young kids, oh, you like video games? Well, this book is a video game. You know, they get them to identify with it by saying it's about their reality. So the awareness of Finnegan's Wake has come to a point here, and this is what I posted on Derek's site before. I made the long statement. Yeah, here's McLuhan writing in 1970, the Playboy magazine. Now look at that. He writes the Playboy. This very important note. He says, T.S. Eliot's famous account of the auditory imagination. You know, Bert, there's a lot of talk about auditory space, acoustic space in Richard Cavell's book, McLuhan in Space, that Theo reviews. And it's really tactile space you've got to get an understanding of. But this whole thing that Cavell does a lot on acoustic space, you get that from T.S. Eliot back in the 30s or so. T.S. Eliot's famous account of the auditory imagination has become an ordinary form of awareness. But Finnegan's Wake, as a comprehensive study of the psychic and social dynamics of all media, remains to be brought into the waking life of our world. Now, with the Internet, since the 90s, because, you know, 25 years later, at least by 2005, you got kids who grew up with the Internet. I would say, Finnegan's Wake now become part of the ordinary awareness of the world. The kids or people can understand it more because the media experience has massaged them into realizing multiple levels, and it's not just a book linear world anymore. So the big contrast for the book world was the acoustic, the auditory imagination. But when you get to tactility extended, that it requires a different awareness, and that's what you get from Finnegan's Wake. So since over the last 10 or 15 years that Finnegan's Wake has been obsolesced and it can be easily understood, a lot easier than the 80 years before, that means a new environment is among us, and that's Ion. Now, Ginny, many people in Western culture have jobs in the information authority world at some level of teaching, at some level of expertise. And Ion undermines everybody in the information world, makes their information, their expertise stupid, limited. And so the new oligarchy...
It's kind of like what Trump is doing.
Yes, he's satirizing them. And
yeah.
So you have what you could say at the time of the printing press and mercantilism comes in, the feudal organization of society was obsolete. And so there are all these wars as the old oligarchies and monarchies tried to hold on to their power. And they ended up sending in like 12-year-old generals. All these kids at the end of the Middle Ages were fighting these old rearview mirror wars and getting wiped out. But that's how weak the monarchies were. So now the information society and And presenting information from an authoritative or specialist point of view is so weak and fragile that the one people that are were used to be respected for it, university professors, are now the assholes of the new world. They're the fascists in a nice, quiet, friendly fascist way. They're the ones who insist on the relevance of their livelihood, the relevance of their role of imparting information. And usually it's literate information, which is even more weak. So we see on the Alice Kuskus blog and other places where I show up, I am not part of the academic world, and they all are insecure when a qualified interloper comes around. And then to have Ion come in, we are the one thing that they are really going to avoid. So that's why the intellectuals would not come around here. That's why I got you fucking dummies, you know. You guys are lucky.
I know, but I know, Bob, but I'm not talking about college professors. I'm not sure they're intellectuals. Like you said, they're mired in the book world.
Yeah.
I'm talking about free-thinking people who have the intellectual capacity to synthesize this information like I do, and who are interested in the next wave, who are in the, you know, 22nd century and beyond, who are, you know, looking at this picture of the Matrix and trying, you know, desperately to get out of all of it, knowing that there has to be a new reality emerging because the old reality is so, I mean, the old reality is almost vaudevillian, or like, it's such a caricature of it's such a distortion. It can't possibly be true, you know.
Well, we do have the top intellectuals listening. We have the Pope, we got the Queen, and we got the Dalai Lama and the head of the CIA, right? Those people are probably pretty smart. At some, you know, yeah, they're above average. They may not be avant-garde poets living in Soho in New York City, but they're pretty fucking informed people, okay? And they know. They recognize. They can hear Ion. They know this is something to pay attention to. And so, you know, the Queen, every day she has to look at her little box of letters and documents from Parliament that she has to review and sign or whatever she does with them. She demands to have a little statement. What's Bob doing today?
So do you feel that Achieve Radio is like the catacomb where everybody is like Nicodemus skulking out in the middle of the night to meet with Jesus, but nobody, or kind of like all the secret voters of Trump who never publicly said they were going to vote for him, but privately. So it's a very private thing. All right. So there's privately, there's a lot of intellectuals.
Yeah. And, you know, we used to say on CKLN, please change your name if you're listening to this show. You know, you don't want people to know that you're listening, participating. And people did.
Yeah. Yeah, Bob. So, Jenny, we're the new stupid ones. We're the new stupid ones because we're making ourselves known.
Yeah, you're here for raw, perceptual, dangling, gangly massage, and that's the best way to be. We're just here to experience some new patterns.
But we're willing to participate, Bob. Like you're saying, the Queen and all the intellectuals are keeping themselves quiet and unknown.
Right. They have to because they've already got audiences. They have to.
It's the only role we got, Bob, is to come and talk to you and on the show.
Yeah, the first shall be last. The professors will be the Kirkos, and then will be last, and you guys, the last, will be the first. See,
and the meek are on the radio. The meek are on payday.
You know, the third Jesus was a loser, but he got a few fucking aphorisms right. You know.
The stupid will be smart, and the smart will be stupid.
Yeah,
he was misunderstood, Bob, because he was. You know,
that's
he was
right.
The stupid one.
Well, I made sure he was misunderstood. I knew he was fucking up. I got John the Revelator to write a garbled fucking interpretation of the Book of Revelation.
But where was Hobob to, you know,
I am the ultimate joke of this. The one guy who is apparently not deserving to have Ion to him ends up getting Ion. That's the big joke on humanity.
No, Jesus needed Hobob there to say, what do you mean, Jesus? Be more specific. Use your words better.
What did I do? Did I do wrong? What did I say wrong?
I said Jesus didn't have Hobob around to say,
no,
what do you
was
mean,
with him.
Jesus? Well, but he could have been clearer if you had corrected him better.
I mugged Jude later and took those 30 pieces of silver. I think he didn't even get any real profit from it.
No, you arranged it. You set Jude up.
I got Jude beat up.
It was your money.
Right. That's right. It was my money. Okay, so Ginny, I don't even know if you are fully sincerely asking the question about the intellectuals, because you know the reason, but we run it up the flagpole anyways and see if something new is said. Right, Ginny, about the question?
Oh, yes, absolutely, Bob. Yes. Oh, yeah, it's just fun to have a conversation, check in, touch base every once in a while and ask the same questions.
Well,
like you said,
not just every once in a while. Not every once in a while, every show, okay?
I'm not here every show, Bob. I'm not going to lie and say, I'm here every show. That's a lie. It's a false representation.
Ginny, you're going to fall back. Yeah, that's why you think there's only a few things to repeat. If you had other shows, you'd find other things that had never been asked about before.
Yeah, that's true. I'm falling, Bob. It's terrible. I'm falling way back.
Yeah, just because you got to build up Carolyn every week. You take 2 days to compose your next statement, your next Oscar-winning appraisal.
That's right.
Carolyn.
That's right. That's what happened, Bob. It's terrible. Save me, Bob.
Excuse me.
People are writing songs about me, giving tributes. What are they doing to you, Bob?
They're trying to kill me.
Yeah.
See, you're just trying to keep up, Bob. You're just trying to keep up with my 2-hour show.
But, okay, so we're talking about Phineas Wake. So I don't think you heard that. Maybe you got it now, but as you move, so Ion all the time is leading up to a meeting and then sabotaging with all the fun on the way to the meeting. And that is showing how the mime works and mirroring back the mime and ultimately wants to sabotage the mind, but then retrieve the mind and have it enjoy itself as one-third of your being. That's what I get from Zappa said back in 1970. The point is to get something way out there through listening to Frank's strange music. And then he says the difficult part, though, is to get them back. So he took responsibility for flipping them out, freaking them out, to try to get them back. So I do that, and Ion does that. But we will be taken to new places, and that's the brain and the mind, what the mind can do, and you learn how to play with it. So what's fun, you know, there's nothing wrong with getting an idea, getting a pattern, and enjoying it for a while. Just hope that you come out of the dream of the inspiration of the pattern. Because you'll end up being a fanatic like me, right?
Yeah. I agree. And if you've been around long enough, that's ultimately what happens. You know, you do go ride the wave of Ion's pattern, whatever they're saying. I hear it all the time on Radio Free Ion because I listen to that quite a bit. And so the archive.
Do you do that at work? You have it going at work?
Well, I just have it going, you know, I can listen to it in my car because I've got it on my phone. I can listen to it here, there, and everywhere. And you do hear, and it's kind of fun because it's a little nostalgic to just be like, oh, yeah, I remember. Oh, gosh, remember those 8 weeks we spent, you know, dissecting the what was the most recent one? The Easter plate, not the Passover plate, and all the amino acids and the food and the eggs and everything. You know, that was fun. I mean, and you start to see the patterns, and then you're just like, okay, this is cool. And
you find out that Ion is talking sensibly. Technically correct, sensibly. You don't get it at first, but then after a while.
Yes, they are talking sensibly. They are making sense. They are using legitimate things, positions, and whatever. But then you're also able to let it go. So you're not trying to accomplish the perfect Passover plate anymore. Whereas, you know, in the beginning, everybody would have been running out and buying their Passover plate items and, you know, setting it all up. So it's that kind of detachment that listening to Ion on a regular basis gives you. The Seder plate. There you go. Greg had it. The Seder.
Yeah. Now, Cha was saying last Wednesday, that there was this thing where I lost it. And I think it was yelling at you, Ginny. And she says, she says, I think it was something called Tailgate. And she says, it was unbelievable how you were. And she says, how different you are now. So I tried to get Bill to figure that out. We figured out the timing. She had listened to it the day before, so we matched it up. And I think we come to May 5th, 2010, one of the last tailgates. And she says James was part of it too. So, but then if you look at the schedule of what Bill, he can look at what he broadcast last the day before, and there was a bit of a tailgate and a bit of a James cash flow. I want
well,
to
I wasn't in
rant.
Any of the tailgates that are on Radio Free Ion because I didn't come onto the scene until the end of June. So I don't know about that. I just know the time that I remember you most profoundly losing it.
You remember the time with you?
No, it wasn't with me. It was with MJ on a McLuhan on Maui, and oh, Lord, Bob, I thought you were going to come out of every skin you've ever had, including Hobobs or Haybobs or whatever his name
right.
is. Oh,
yeah.
My gosh, that was hilarious. But I don't know who
you know
would have been
that is? I like to play that. We got to find them.
Yeah, I would like to hear that.
I thought the best attack was when you and I attacked, what's her name, because she wouldn't put her dog on.
Oh, Tina.
Remake, right.
Yeah. Tina came back, like a year or two ago.
Is that Bobcast?
Bobcast, yeah. During
and she
Bobcast.
Came on, hadn't been on in years.
She hadn't been on years. She comes on and gets eye on.
First thing she says
First
is Jake.
Thing. Jake.
She wants to talk about Jake.
She's never
No way,
about
really? I must have missed that part. Jeez.
Yeah, and
oh
me and Carol, goodness. Without knowing the other was going to do it, we both jumped on her immediately. You're going to ask about fucking Jake. That's all you ever asked of 5 years before, blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
And then she said, oh, he's sick, his heart and everything. So I said, have you got him on Remake? Oh, well, no. And I said, well, get out of here. Just get out.
So it was more Carol. That wasn't a very long rant.
Get out. If you don't know what to do about heart things yet, don't ask Ion. Ion will tell you to eat sewage, and are you going to do that? I mean, this attachment to Ion about health is really scary.
Okay, so that's another topic. But so, Ginny, if you hear it, it won't be on for another year. How long does the cycle take, the 1,000 hours, to get back to what was on last week?
It takes like 33 days or something, Bob. But I'll figure out where the MJ one is on the McLuhan on Maui. It should be on there because the guests are laid out. I'll see if I can find it for you.
Right. And I hope to find the one Cha because I want to see what she thinks is outrageous. It's more analyzing Cha. We're just trying to figure out what she's vulnerable to. And it may not – she was thinking tailgate, but this James. And if you were on, yeah, definitely you weren't part of tailgate because the serious ones ended on May 19th and you didn't show up till June 2010.
Right.
And but it could have been some other thing, a rewrite or a part of a – James show. Oh, you know what I found out? Bill told me that when James called him a couple of years ago, a year or two ago, he said, I didn't know this before. I mean, Bill tells me everything that goes on with James, but we didn't have an update. So I just, out of the blue, anything from James? Not expecting anything. And Bill says, yes. Well, I haven't talked to him in a year or two, but... I said, what did you talk about? And he said, he said that he'd like to come back and do a show on the condition that we're kicked off his network. You
know
this, Carol.
Oh, my God. Are you serious?
I am serious. And Bill had never told me this before, or it didn't come up or something. And so Bill said, well, sure, if you got $3,000 a week, no problem.
What a freak.
Yeah, what a freak that he – this is his megalomaniac, fucked up, irreversible megalomania that he thinks he's so important that Bill's – oh, yes, James, you want the show, we'll give you a show. And, yes, if you don't want Bob, you can't have Bob. That's right. We'll get rid of Bob. But Bill had the perfect answer.
Oh, my Lord.
But that was pretty crazy. I mean,
yeah, that is crazy.
He could not be on the same network as us. And this is the guy who owes me $2,000, you know, and all the other shit he's done.
Golly,
so so he did that, and Bill just said to him, well, you'd have to pay what I get from them a week, $3,000. And he never heard from James again.
Of course not.
Yeah. But he didn't know what we were, how much we were on, maybe. You know, he maybe wasn't paying attention to the many hours we were on. So that's an update there. Always willing to expose James. Always, you know, no confidentiality when it comes to James. If he's out there bullshitting about us, we know that. If he's saying that kind of shit to Bill, what's he saying to his three friends out in London that he might still have?
Right. Well, more like three vagrant people who live on the streets underneath their newspapers in Los Angeles.
That's right. That let him crash at their cardboard box.
That's right. That's right, where James is crashing these days. Because believe me, that is not far from the truth, people. It is not.
Yeah. So we did the Finnegan's Wake, and that great quote that Finnegan's Wake is not in the ordinary awareness of the 70s, but 40 years later, the new thing is, you remember, Finnegan's Wake was not understood for 50, 60, 70 years, much like ION, but our products communicate before they understand ION intellectually, and they may never find out about ION and still have the products. We had some great testimonials. We got a new one. Somebody had kidney stones, and they went. They had them for 30 years, you know, agony every month whenever they come through, and took the Remag, pretty well stopped it right away, and they announced that they haven't had any kidney stone pain in 8 months. Now, that means, and Carolyn says, you can't cure kidney stones. There's no known cure. Mm. So, except Remag. Now we know Remag does it. So there's a major thing to tell people, because a lot of people have kidney stones, to tell them that they don't have to have it anymore. That's this is a part of the effect of ION. This is communicating on all media levels. And the first media was food, human prepared food. And so we go back to the source, and we have a revolution in food.
Yes, but didn't we discover that in the rewrite that as McLuhan was consumed with the communion, because it was the relationship to food. It was something that it was communication that you could put in your mouth that was not based in language, and it was going to, you know, tie you in. And ION Cog said that the RNA drops were new information from the beginning. New information. That's their most classic description of what the RNA drops are.
Yeah,
so,
is new technology, is new information.
Yep, absolutely. Yep, very
good. So, you know, de Kirchhoff and all these people, the McLuhan guys, they will not engage ION, it seems. You know, de Kirchhoff made a nice joke, though. I told him when I visited my niece, told he and his partner about, like, Friday night, told him about ION, and they just listened. They were interested. Then the next morning, we were getting breakfast, or they were making breakfast for us. Derek's in the kitchen, and he goes, "Look at this, Bob." And the lid on the garbage, the little garbage can in the kitchen, It went opened automatically, you know, and then he threw the garbage in. But he didn't have to put his foot on the garbage bottom and make the lid go up. It just went – I didn't know how it happened. The lid just went up, you know what I mean, by itself?
Yeah.
Some remote thing, or I don't know what he's got there, some electronic thing. So he goes, "Look at this, Bob." And then the lid goes up, and he throws it in, and he goes, "That's ION. ION," he says. So I thought that was a pretty good joke. He understood that there was a magical quality to ION, and he tried to claim he was having it right in his kitchen. You understand? You getting this? That he looks at the garbage thing, and then it opens. He goes, "ION," and then he throws the garbage in it. You're not getting enough laughter here.
Or he's thinking that ION should be put in the garbage.
No, he was claiming that ION was with him, and he was doing ION. He was doing conventional telekinetic ESP stuff, and he was mocking it in a way, mocking the idea of ion. But he had a nice gadget to do it. So I appreciated the joke.
He was pretending to be the magician.
Yeah, yeah. So using ion. And that's the closest he ever came to it.
To engage the ion. I could make something up about some of us notice the gap because you hide everything using McLuhan's, the laws of media. You hide how significant everything is by changing up your format all the time and playing, you know, offensive music to some and all that. So there's a lot of things that can either, that can turn people off, but you do it purposefully. And some people notice. And that's, for some reason, I want to make something up about some of us fall in the gap and like it and stay there as opposed to being on either side. You know, that the intellectuals get stuck in preserving and their intellectual environment. And then there's those that have turned away from reading and book knowledge and, you know, intellectual stuff entirely. The zombies or the dead, the other kind of dead that are uneducated, they've turned off of education entirely. But then there's something in the middle that I want to call the gap. And some of us are so attracted to it or something that we stay and listen, and others don't.
It may have to do with the drops and engaging ion, listening to ion, where it's a lot of intellectuals.
Their
mind book-oriented, and they haven't engaged the drops. And if they don't engage the drops and they listen to ion, it can be a total destruction of their whole paradigm that they're engaging.
So, Bert, would you and total I still be here for years and years if we weren't on the drops?
I really can't answer that. I would say probably not. But
I don't
know. Reason behind we're here. But that's what it is. I mean, you know, I'm sure that there are intellectuals or whoever have come and investigated Bob. But at the same time, I mean, if they can't get through Bob, there's no way they're going to be able to get with ion, because ion is like a supplement to Bob. And especially if they come on, they'll get ganged up with Bob and ion together, and it'll be a blitzkrieg. So their whole paradigm, their thought processes will be threatened because, I mean, first thing, they're book-oriented, which we know, having been here as long, most people, is that, you know, to be engaging in a book is too slow anyway, your perception. So, you know, they're dead men walking. Like that Facebook group. I mean, those guys are dead. I mean, it's a true, sad thing to say if you look at it from basic everyday language, but it's a true thing. They're dead.
They're memorializing
their whole
themselves.
Sense perception. Their sense perceptions of what they're totally thinking of repeating of what McLuhan is, if they're not trying to go beyond that, they're dead. They're dead. Magnesium deficiency waiting.
Right. Now I have an example here. So if I go to Ion and Bob, you go to Bart's mashups. That is at Ion and Bob, right? I think there, because I was doing that for Reiner. There was this whole list. So what would that be listed under? You know what it's called to get? Well, Bart's Ion mashups are not it. And no, maybe, is it a keto?
Oh, it's at the bottom of the page, Bob. Scroll down
keto,
to the bottom of the
probably,
page.
Keto's notes.
There's a link at the bottom of Ion and Bob.
No, I'm thinking of a keto. Yeah, no, I see Bart's mashups. That's not the one. So it must be a keto's list.
Then
so,
keep scrolling down.
Yeah, so where is that? How do you find a keto's list? It's like keto. Oh, there's guide keto's guide to Bob Fest. Doesn't seem to be listed at the bottom. So keto's rants. That's what it's called. A keto's rants. Let's see what comes up. You do that. Okay, guy. Where is a keto's cash flow? Aikido's Why Isn't There Rants? What do you write in for that?
I'm trying to search just the name Aikido. Oh, here we go. Aikido's Cash Flow Notes. Oh, you want rants.
Yeah, there is an inventory of rants.
For Aikido.
Yeah. Doesn't seem to be there.
Oh, here it is. He has it listed rants and treasures by year.
Right.
Rants and treasures by year.
Oh, under Radio Ion?
No, if you just type in the search Google rants and treasures, it'll come up. You know, Rants and Treasures 2014, Rants and Treasures 2010, 2016.
Okay.
He has it by year.
Right, Rants and Treasures.
And the symbol and. Yeah, and the symbol and Treasures.
Yeah, so let's go to 2016. There it is. The second one, the crack of a black hole. So... I like to turn on the intellectuals. The best way to turn them on to Ion is to get them to listen to some rants, because they can only enter it through humor. If they know that Ion's capable of humor, then they know he's not a New Age fanatic, platitudinous, you know, cosmic divine wisdom kind of thing. So this person listened to, this is number two. This may have been the second rant, and banned me from his site, his Facebook page, because of it. Now, this is a responsible person, a lefty who is
a responsible person.
You know, that has a whole clientele of people in unions, and he negotiates and lobbies on behalf of union matters. He's a working class representative.
Attorney.
Yeah, he's an intellectual, he's a musician, he's a theater playwright, he's a very talented guy intellectually, but he identifies with the working class, you know? And so let's play this and see what we think. Did I go too far? So we got to go over to Soundflower, and volume's up, and I think that's it.
Something about Skype. Start.
Cracks the black hole mystery in quantum computing.
Ah! Okay, so I'll ask you about black hole computing. Listen to the response. Okay.
Cracks the black hole mystery in quantum computing.
Ah!
That's going to be funny. I can hear Evan now.
What did Bob say he was going to do with the crack of a black hole?
What? With the crack of a black hole?
I don't understand. That's
black woman again.
Little man,
the damn black woman.
Not little
Bob.
Man, but black hole. The black hole. The crack of a black hole. That's what he's talking about. He wants to see if the crack of a black hole is pink instead of black. That's what he wants to know. That's what he's trying to make. That's so funny. That's Bob. He's so funny. Everybody wants to sleep with Bob. Isn't that nice? It's all sleep with Bob.
That's right.
Amazing Bob, amazing Bob. Oh, sorry. That's another show. We do another show on Wednesday. It's the Bob Hour. It's so wonderful. It's great. Y'all have to tune in.
Okay, so he told me that he listened to something, and he said, I could never play that for any of my friends. It's outrageous. It's racist. He says, you have – now, he doesn't know Ion at all. He goes, you have this Southern cracker, you know, white guy, racist guy, talk about – and I thought the word nigger would be on there. I thought that's what he was pissed off at. So I found it and played it, and this is nothing compared to what Ion could be capable of. Okay, so you say a black hole, like you're talking about a black hole, and he makes it a black hole, and the crack of a black hole. Is that going too far? Yeah, maybe you're not supposed to call prostitutes, you're not supposed to name their ethnic, their racial component when you talk about prostitutes. Anyways, that's an example of someone who's really stuck in the mortar world and has all these values and thinks they represent a certain position that he'd get in trouble with the friends he has.
Yeah, and that's the inclusiveness, the fearful inclusiveness that's rampant in the whole transgender world, where people are too afraid not to accept transgender as being normal.
Right, and well, then they have to have their
which
safe
is,
zones.
I mean, normal in quotes. It's interesting because Bob and Ed were talking about billions and this person and the whole transgender business. It's
non-gendered, I think they're called, Carolyn. Non-gendered.
Non-gendered. So yeah. It's a way of acting out. It's how this generation is being outrageous so that their parents throw up their arms and get freaked out.
Yes.
Also, the whole five-bodied business, they're playing out their bodies without really realizing it.
So how does that relate to this guy's political correctness?
You're not allowed to talk about black hoes or transgender or anything in a negative way because they have their political rights.
Yeah. So, well, we know that.
Political correctness.
So what's you're just saying that the non-gendered is the latest version of this.
Yeah, that's all.
But so this guy, he posts on his site. He says, I got a problem. He sends it out to his audience. And his audience is a lot of well-known people in Toronto, all levels of culture. He's right in the middle of it. These are names that I remember from the 80s and that, and new names. And they, of course, they all think Trump is the biggest mistake in history. And they got the Canadian vibe on it. And so he said, you know, this person, he makes very interesting posts. But every now and then there's something on there that is very bad, and I don't want to ban him from my Facebook completely, but how do I control it so he doesn't, get us in trouble? And so I saw that, and so I called him. We had a conversation on the phone, and I said, I will not post anything to do with Ion. Well, he went on explaining how pissed off he was about this Ion thing. He says, you know, normally I'd never talk to you again, but I know you. You're not that kind of person, but I don't understand how you can do it. And my rebuttal was basically, geez, you heard nothing. Had I heard it? No, I hadn't heard it yet. That's right. And so I said, well, we're quite extreme on the show, but I'm not afraid of words. And he said, no, but I can't. He says, I can't play this to my black friends. They'll really get upset. So I thought I had nigger in it. So I went and listened to it, and it was not that bad. But meanwhile, I came to agreement that I would not post anything of Ion on his forum, but I'd do my other stupid stuff like McLuhan and this Phoenix Wake thing. I just posted on his thing. He likes that stuff. So we overcame the rupture. But it's an example, Ginny, of smart people actually being very contemporary, very conventional in what they're controlled by.
Yeah, and all these smart people are the ones that completely fall apart when they get some negative health diagnosis and they just run to the doctor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're very conservative on the medical stuff.
Yeah.
And they're really, did you see there was a march for science? Now the new thing is they think the alt-right and Trump is against science because he's just questioning a little bit about the vaccination thing. There's an incredible naivety about science. So it's people who are smart, who are informed about the issues, they're all doing it by reading. And they celebrate the chemical body and science that goes with the chemical body. They can't take our parascience. We do parascience, P-A-R-A. Carolyn finds these are very radical people, but they are outraged that Carolyn questions vaccinations. So what are they conditioned by? They're conditioned by literacy. They're very good at literacy. They think they have to be informed. They get upset at Trump for not being able to finish a sentence. You know, this is despicable, have an image like that in the White House. So it's like they're like the generals, the 14-year-old generals, really good at being a general, but they're 14 years old, and it's, 1602, and they're going to get killed because the printing press is changing the world. And so you got a lot of – I told somebody a few months ago that the dumb people beat the smart people in the Trump thing. But it's the dumb people who are considered non-literate, can't read, blah, 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 don't have any sophistication, and they manage to whip the Hillary Clinton literate wonks. That's what's puzzled the educated people. So Derek said we need to – he's something about stupidity in the world today.